Hi Coral, you wanted to ask me some questions?
Yes, I had four questions that I asked you to let me know you would love to be asked. And the first one I thought was really a good place to start, that being, what don't we know?
Yeah, I think that's the starting point and the end point of everything of research. Of course, science is part of that. I think science is the group of people who likes that question and who is different from people in religion which try to answer it by an assumption. We don't know, but we're not going to study it. We're going to put an answer instead and pretend that that's the answer to the question that we don't want to look into, because we can't look into it. Because if you look at it from a deeper perspective, whatever approach you take, you find you end up with the lack of foundation of anything that we can understand. I tend to formulate it as a hypothetical question or a paradoxical question. What is the container of this universe? Is it a box? Is it a bucket? Is it a balloon? Or is it a bubble? Essentially, those are, of course, the four aspects of alchemy. If it is a box, it is solid, and it in a way contains itself. The box just shows that it is limited and it is finite, as classical science so often assumed, and then of course claimed that what they found about something that is limited and finite, they claimed it to be infinite and unlimited. Strange paradox there.
Mm-hmm.
If it is something that you can contain in a bucket, it would be like a liquid. But then what would that bucket be? And how would that bucket be formed? Where would that bucket come from? If it was a balloon, likewise, you know that it needs to have some envelope around it to be limited and contained in its place. But then, of course, where does that balloon come from? If it is a bubble, then it could burst any moment, and then you still have that question, okay, but then what defines it? And if it is undefinable, then what are we discussing? And whatever the answer to that question is, it always follows up with the next question, okay, so what is that box, bucket, balloon, or bubble contained by? And ultimately, if you really think about that, if you ask your mind to ponder on that, then your mind, of course, needs to deal with something which is, say, a thought which is formed or shaped or defined or tangible, right next to something which is undefined, intangible, inaccessible, unexplainable. And that means that there is no foundation to what we know. If we do not know what the universe is contained in, then we do not know the foundation of anything that we are thinking about. So that means that the unknown becomes very tangible, very real, very accessible, but certainly not understandable. And any assumption that we know becomes very fuzzy or vague or undefined or indefinable if that knowledge is not founded on anything. In society they call that a taboo. In religions they call it the mystery, or covered up by a dogma. And in science they call it an axiom, which is actually an assumption. so that whatever we want to know, if we do not look at what we do not know, we still do not know whatever we know, because we end up with something like a spider web within a spider web within a spider web within a spider web. But what does the first spider web connect to? And if you look at that in our body, we have that kind of connection to our environment with our arms and legs, and actually head with the sensory system. So at the hips and at the shoulders, we have a joint which connects directly to the body. Whatever happens at the shoulder or at the hips goes straight into the body. The alchemist would call that the earth element. In system theory, they would describe that as a defined or definable state. If you look, however, at the elbows and the knees, then whatever happens there does not go into the body directly, unless the upper bone is pressed very directly towards the body. With other directions, you can always turn, rotate away from it, and that's what the alchemists call the water element. It's the process definition in system theory. If you then look at the wrists and the ankles, whatever happens there will most likely not affect the body directly, but there is this elasticity. The body can sort of buffer what happens, or can push away from what happens, and that expansion and contraction is what the alchemists call the air element, and what in system theory is called the transformation. And at the fourth level, you have the fingertips and the toe tips. That is where you can actually decide if you do or do not make contact with whatever is around us. So that's where we determine or define our involvement. And in this way, in these four joints of the arms and the legs, you can recognize the earth, water, air and fire elements, same as the box, the bucket, the balloon and the bubble. And there again, you can see that the way that we relate to our environment is very undefined. And that's not for our body alone, but that's also for our mind. So whatever we are thinking about, whatever we try to understand, it is always something that connects to something that we cannot understand, cannot grasp, are not in touch with, and which essentially is not part of us, even though we are part of it. And I realized that in the same way that we have that contact with our arms and legs into the environment, in our head, in our mind, we have the same. And I've described that as the difference between different kind of thoughts. So the thought I consider to be the third of the thinking process. It is something that has been developed by a kind of mental mastication, a digestion of information, and then out comes this well-formed but plastic and pliable and sometimes diarrhea-like thought, as a kind of, well, this is what it is. But this what it is has been formed by that thinking process out of something which before was not that fixed or not that certain or not that concrete or defined. Before the thought, there is the idea or the ideal. Those two are very much connected, which is, say, not the solid form of thinking, but the liquid form of thinking, where there is a flow of ideas or a flow of ideation, which is different from the landscape around it. So there the thoughts, the thinking starts, because the ideas, the ideation is all, that process is already taking place. And so thought is a form, and idea is a process, and that process comes out of, precipitates out of something which I call a concept, which is like the rain that forms the water, that forms the ocean. The rain then is the concept, the cloud sort of precipitated, the idea or the ideal is the river, and the thought is the ocean. So we have a hydraulic cycle, hydrodynamic cycle in our mind, in which the thinking process goes from that transformation from cloud to river in the form of the rain, the air element. Then it goes into the water element of the river with the ideas and the ideals. And then it goes into this concrete reservoir of say, knowledge, which we then can call a thought. And notice that the idea and the ideal are very similar but very different, because the ideal is that flow of understanding as it takes place not on the landscape of the things that we know, like a river on the land, but it is like a Gulf Stream in the ocean, or it could be like the jet stream in the skies, or it could be like the aurora borealis in the ionosphere. So that process of ideation, the forming of ideas and ideals, can take place in the tangible or in the fluid or in the process level or in the integration level. And in the thinking dynamic, in my mind, the origination of thought from ideas and ideals, from concepts, comes from the idea of from a notion, and in that approach the notion is where we connect to the unknown, so it is like the no thing. The notion and the no thing are very closely connected. It's like the clear sky, and it is only when in the clear sky the clouds start to form and the rain can start that we can have concepts. And once the rain has formed and is flowing, either in the sky or on the land or on the oceans, then we have the ideas and ideals, and then out of that comes this pool of collected mental experience, the thoughts. So same as we have these four joints in the arms and legs, we have these four joints in our mental world, in our head, of the notions, the concepts, the ideas, the ideals, and the thoughts. And in science, a lot of attention is given to these thoughts, and there is a Dutch word game which I often use, because there is this wonderful interplay in words, where you can talk about four levels of thought development in science, and essentially it's the same word with one letter difference. The Wetenschapper is the scientist who has thoughts, knowledge. It is the opposite of the Wetenschapper, the one who explores the unknown. And for what I see, the whole purpose of science is the angst reduction of humanity. The scientists are the scouts into the unknown, who get to know the unknown so that everybody can know their way around in that terra incognita, and that pathways can be formed, and that trails can be made, and that people can actually journey in that unknown. So the Schepper is the one that goes out to find the unknown. De wetenschipper is the one who then has to sort of learn to navigate this unknowable and connect it to what we do know. It is that digestive process of taking in the information, assimilating it, adapting, adopting, learning from the unknown, getting to know newness. And then after the wetenschipper has learned to navigate that, the wetenschopper needs to find a new place for that what has been churned out of the unknown, and has to connect that to everything that we do know. And then the wetenschapper stores it on shelves and basically archives it and says, this is what it is. But science as a whole is that combination of the wetenschapper, the wetenschipper, the wetenschopper, and the wetenschapper, like a sailor who sets out to explore the unknown and then discovers where to navigate, then is able to bring new knowledge to the harbor, and then people over there will shelve it. And when schools or universities basically dish out what has been shelved and then say that this is how it is, then they forget about how it came to be. And if they do not question anymore how it came to be, then they ignore that whole digestive process.
Yeah.
And if they ignore how it came to be, they also forget that what has been discovered is very arbitrary. Just like something that has been brought from a ship ashore and put in a storehouse, it very much depends where it came from. If you bring something from a mountain somewhere, it is different than if you bring it from an iceberg somewhere. And in this way, we can see that there's a lot of knowledge of science which, once it is stored, it just doesn't keep itself together anymore. The bit of the iceberg melts away, disappears, while the bit of the mountain will stay and seemingly have an existence in itself. But knowledge which is not conditional is knowledge which is disconnected from its origin and which is disconnected from its context. And that kind of knowledge is an example of alienation. And alienation is something that you have when people get disturbed because they are mistaken. They can even become mad and aggressive, toxic, because if they lose the understanding of how they fit into the environment, then they become misfits in that environment. And essentially something or somebody who fits in the environment is called an angel. Their ambassador or messenger, angel of that specific domain. They're representative for it and can help understand how that works and how you can work with it. But if they are misfits, then they're devils. They don't want to be in that environment where you put them. They try to find a way out of it, and they will trick and sneak and deceive whatever way they can do it to go to an environment from which they do originate, where they do feel at home. I discovered that principle when I first started to learn about healing, and specifically this was in Shiatsu, where it's possible to, with the hands, feel where there is, say, a gap in the vibrational field of somebody and where there's an excess. And then I could simply put my hand over the area where there's too much of it, and with the right hand I could put it over the place where it's too little of it, and that I would become the conductor, so that from too much it could go to too little and it balanced out. And then essentially I would guide the devil back to the angel, how the excess filled up the deficit and everything became balanced again. That balancing is then the crossing from one side of the boundary to the other side of the boundary, has something in somebody has created a block as a result of which these two parts could no longer connect, there could no longer be a flow, there could no longer be an ongoing transformation between these areas, so the integration was lost. And this kind of integration we also have when we digest something. First we chew it, that's a physical process, and then chemically we digest it in the stomach with acids, and then enzymatically in the duodenum we transform it, which is at the electromagnetic level, and then it goes through the gut lining, which is an assimilation process by the living cells, that's the information integration. And in that way we can then see that what was outside can come inside. And we also see that in the sensory system, where the sensory cells respond to vibrations. It's a zero-dimensional point of contact, which then has a Dirac pulse response. The response to vibration releases a charge discharge in the sensory cell. That is then relayed through the one-dimensional neuron as a Fourier code, which then goes into the neural plexus, which is two-dimensional, and where the information is processed in a Moiré array. And then it goes into the brain, which is three-dimensional, where a holographic picture, a Gabor hologram, is created. So that's not just where we see that this process is four-dimensional, but that's also where we can see why we have four different levels and domains of consciousness. So that when we are dealing with the unknown, the notions which become concepts, which become ideas, which become thoughts, or the touching with the fingertips and then the elastical interaction with it at the wrist, and then the adaptation, the sensing at the elbow, and then the connection we make at the shoulder. That principle then connects us to the environment, and we experience the same in the sexual interaction. There too we have these four dimensions. First is the anatomy with the touch and the vibrations which start to connect and attune. Then from the body there's a physiological response. The processing in the body changes as a result of that touch. So the chemistry changes. And then after that, the electromagnetic level changes, which is neurons and the hormones. So the neurocrine system adapts. So the change of the hormones changes the neurological responsivity. And as a result, changes the way the information is integrated, and then as a result in the light field everything can reconnect, everything can dissolve and reform itself in that process which people know as orgasm. And that transition from anatomy to physiology to the electromagnetic system to the consciousness system is also what we see when a cell, say for example the first cell in the body, replicates. The 3D material dissolves, the 2D molecule, that's the electric current in the molecules, evaporates. Then the 1D electron leap in the atoms charges or discharges. And then in the zero-dimensional, zero-point quantum field, it all mirrors and bounces back. We connect to the universe, and the universe then connects back to us. And that connection between us and the universe is maintained or re-established or redefined or lost. And For me, that is an example, a very concrete, tangible example of how we directly connect to the unknown and the unknowable. And that what the religions call the mystery, or if they take it a step further, which they call God. But as the Jewish tradition says, actually the Hebraic tradition says, it's actually the Pharaonic tradition, and it's also the Zoroastrian, the Mazdaznan tradition. So what we might know as the Muslim tradition based on the Christian tradition, based on the Hebrew tradition, comes from the Egyptian tradition and from the Persian tradition. It actually goes back to the Dogon tradition, because there they already had this understanding of how we are part of the unknowable unknown. Mm-hmm. And calling it God basically addresses that we connect to it, so we redefine how we link into it, we redefine our boundary. Do we separate ourselves from it? Do we integrate from into it? Or do we surf and navigate it? So that's called generator, operator, or destroyer of that involvement. But of course that God principle, or G-O-D principle, generates, operates, or destroys the boundary by which we connect to the unknown, the unknowable. But that connection is meaningful only if we can actually work with it, which means that we need to be able to integrate that. So
can
that
you
is
say
why
more
I
about that? Can you say?
Yeah.
Can you say more about that?
What yeah. Does it mean so to integrate? Yeah. I call that the I God principle. I for integration, G for generation, O for operation or organization, and D for destruction or disconnection. So, as we have our skin, which defines the edge of our body, and our body in that sense is a soliton, it's like a smoke ring. It actually has the shape of a smoke ring, if you look at it from the mathematical perspective of topology. From mouth to anus, we have this pipeline like the hose of a vacuum cleaner going right through the body, and everything in the gut is still outside of the body. And so our body itself is like a donut, like a torus, which is the soliton, which means that edge between the known and the unknown is actually the shape of a torus, as described by Lawrence Edwards in his book The Vortex of Life. That torus is also a counterform of an egg. So when they talk about the cosmic egg, they talk about that transformation which Lawrence Edwards from the geometries indicates. And the other counterform of the torus is the vortex. The vortex is formed when a line turns inside out on itself. So when you have a line go through a point on the line, it will trace a vortex. So the vortex, the torus, and the egg are in that sense three aspects of God, the generation, operate, destruction of the interface between the part and the whole. So that interface is the singularity where the part and the whole turns inside out on itself, and the part can be formed. And tetrionics, you can actually see that's how then the tetrion, the primordial form of matter, is formed. And that once that tetrion, that primordial form of matter, is formed, once the body is formed, it is defined within its environment, because it essentially self-defines. So in tetrionics you can then much better see how the part is part of the whole, because the whole simply churns, curdles into itself and forms bubbles at the tetrahedral form of the tetrion, as it is represented in tetrionics. And then once that form has been formed within the formless, then there is the interaction of the quantum field on that tetrion, which is an electromagnetic dynamic interaction. But by this electromagnetic dynamic interaction, the part is moved in the whole. So the generation, operation, destruction, the God principle, is then, say, seen in tetrionics. You can see how the whole, which to us is invisible, forms and moves the part. And that's what the books of tetrionics describe. And that's where we can then go much deeper into this understanding of what God is. God is the generation, operator, destruction of this boundary. That's the principle by which the quantum field, which is a zero field, then can form photons, W bosons, and then tetrions. The zero-dimensional quantum field can then create the one-dimensional photon, the two-dimensional W boson, and the three-dimensional tetrion. And that's where we can then see how the material is formed. And then we can understand how the formless forms and moves the formed. And that is then that God principle, generate, operate, destroy. And the quantum field can generate these tetrions. The quantum field can operate, move the particles around. But the quantum field can also destroy them. But the generation, operation, and destruction of tetrions, or the generation, operation, destruction of the universe, is not a happenstance event. It is always in direct reflection to what happens in that quantum field. So the universe as a whole is, let's say, a 3D printout of the dynamic in that quantum field. So as the religion calls it, the universe is an expression of the thought of God. Well, it's not the thought, it's not the idea, it's not a concept, it's actually the notion. So creation is an ongoing notion, and actually we are part of that. So even though the tetrion is three-dimensional in the zero-dimensional quantum field, which fills the whole universe, likewise our body is seemingly separate in the universe, but our body originated from the Earth turning inside out on itself. In a more tangible sense, a charge discharge of a lightning in the primordial atmosphere of Earth created an amino acid. The amino acid, as a kind of antenna, created a continuous charge field, a radio field, an information field around it. As a result, it could connect up with other amino acids and other atoms, and could form proteins, then RNA, and then DNA. And as Lynn Margulis said, we're still talking about this God principle. The electromagnetic radio information field of these molecules then made it possible to produce the fungus, the virus, and the microbes. That is the description by Gaston Nasson. As Lynn Margulis said, once these microbes were formed, which of our four types, the earth type, the water type, the air type, and the light type, these are called the anaerobic, the ones under the soil, the hydrobic, the ones in the water, the aerobic, the ones in the air, and the photosynthesizing, the ones that can work with the light. And as she, Lynn Margulis, described, when these four forms came together, the eukaryote cell could be formed, which is exactly what the Chinese describe when they talk about the dragon, because it can walk the earth, it can swim in the water, it can fly in the air, and it can breathe fire. Likewise, the eukaryote cell could connect to the earth, could connect to water, could connect to earth, could connect to light. And that then is an instance of this I-God principle in action, that this generation, operation and destruction of the relationship between the part and the whole is what creates everything. So for me it was quite funny when I realized that what people called God, we can indeed call G-O-D, generate, operate, destroy, because from the perspective of system theory, we can only define a system if we can relate it to that what is undefined. And so then the G-O-D principle in itself is meaningless, because it would only explain how one part appears, exists and disappears, like somebody born, living and dying, but doesn't give access to this other part, where it all came from. Where do people, where are people born from, and where are people dying into? As Jaap van der Waal says, the dying process is simply a birth to the next level. So we need to add this fourth component to the G-O-D principle, and that fourth component is we need to integrate that what happens in the tangible and the physical, and the visible, the G-O-D, something, a thing is formed, maintained and then disappears, but it forms out of the unformed. So we need to integrate, we need to see how the forming of that one bit connects to the forming of any bit and every bit. So we need to connect it to the, to say the principle of creation, and that's why I call that the I-God principle: integration, generation, operation, destruction. So with the integration you can see that the generation and the destruction loops back into something else and originates from something else, and it's only when we address that something else that we can look for that and can see that. That only then will the sailor go out on the sea and discover the unknown and learn something new, bring that into the harbor so that it can be stored in the storage sheds. So the I-God principle is the foundation of our experience, the foundation of the creation of anything in the universe. And that I-God principle is what operates within us as a part of the whole. And as I mentioned, the operation or the dynamic of that I-God principle we see very explicitly in the first cell turning inside out on itself. When the matter matter dissolves, the molecules evaporate, the atoms discharge and then bounce back in the quantum field, and then atoms recharge and the molecules condensate and then the materials are formed. So in that way we can see that we are directly connected to everything else in the universe, but we can only understand that if we see that our body anatomy, the same as this principle of orgasm, the body anatomy is formed by the physiology. The body anatomy in itself is meaningless because it is only consequential. It's only the print out of what the physiology does. That's the chemical process of cell communication. But the physiology, that cell communication can take place only because the cells are already communicating, knowing, sharing with each other. They are all responding to the same information field. That's electromagnetic. The cells are embedded in this radio field called the Qi when you look at it as a cloud, called Shen when you look at it as a cloud, called Qi when you see that there are lightning-like flows within it. But it is to the Shen and Qi dynamic of the radio information field and the flow within that field that the cells individually respond. And of course, I never forget that all of the body cells originate from the first cell. They're connected to each other by feedback loops, but they're also connected by their DNA being the tuning fork, which connects to that radio field as the hologram which connects them. And that's not just in the body, but in the brain we see that more specifically. That's where the Gabor hologram is projected and connected. And that's also what Peter Garayev showed, that if you put a laser beam onto DNA, it will project a hologram. So we, as the tangible, are connected to the intangible of that light field of the hologram. Every cell in the body does that and regulates what they do as a result. So the anatomy is produced by the physiology, but the physiology can be only because the cells are all part of that regulatory system. The electromagnetic information biohologram, but that biohologram, that electromagnetic tuning of the body into the environment, can only exist because there is that consciousness level, the information integration system, which is where the information in the body that the cells work with connects to the information of the environment which the cells work with, which is also the information of our part of the universe which the cell working with, which is part of the information of the universe as a whole. So again, we have these four levels, and the cells individually and collectively work with that. And as soon as people understand that and learn to do that, humanity will be healed, because all of the idiot behavior in humanity, idiot comes from idios, which is people who cannot think beyond their own self. At the moment that they, say, go through intellectual or spiritual puberty and realize that we are all part of the same system, that we are all cell in the body of humanity, then humanity will function as an integral whole. As long as that's not the case, there will be polarities within humanity, because people do not see that anybody who has an opposite point of view is probably looking at it from an opposite perspective, and thus seeing the opposite of what they can see. So together they complement and complete each other, and then once they understand that, then together they can do more than alone, and then they realize that as a cell in the body of humanity, all people complement and complete each other, and humanity is that whole organism in which everybody knows that they are part of that organism. And that's what in India they call the God man, God woman, with the God awareness, because the God, we know that we are generator, operator and destroyer. Yeah. On behalf of humanity, on behalf of all life on Earth, on behalf of the cosmos existing in existence. And that's where mysticism then tries to explain that to people throughout the ages. And mysticism is then that approach where the unknown is known, and that it is known that the unknown is unknowable, but that doesn't matter, because the unknown exists within us, not as the unknown or the unknowable, but as freedom of choice, and that we use freedom of choice to navigate in this unknowable unknown, and that by freedom of choice we are able to learn to operate as creators in creation by, and that's the core of mystical training, realizing that we are instances and examples of the universe doing its thing, so that we are actually not individuals, and certainly not individuals, which are people with internal fragmentations, people which are internally divided, but that we are transcendental beings. Our unique individual being is the same as everybody else has. We are all different, and that makes us all the same. And once we realize that we are all the same and must be different, then we can connect up. Then we can see that we are part of humanity, then we can see that we can act on behalf of humanity, but then we also realize that we are part of all life forms, and that in everything we do, we will need to act on behalf of all life forms on planet Earth. And then once we realize that, we also will be aware that whatever we do, we can do, because we are actually the universe acting right now, right here. So we are Pope on Earth, because you represent the universe as a whole. You're the creator in creation, and we practice our participation in creation by operating freedom of choice, and that's the essence of life. But freedom of choice is always connected to not knowing, and that is why I said that first question is so important, that we first need to know what we do not know, because once we know that we do not know, we stop pretending that we know and that we are what we are, and then we can start to learn what else there is, how is somebody else different from us, and what can we learn from that, and how can we together do more than we can do alone, and how are we as individuals part of something much larger. And once we actively, cognitively, consciously, and in our feeling are aware of that, that is what in Buddhism is called the homecoming, because then you know that we are always connected, we are always born separate, but we die together. But once you have that experience that telepathically we are all linked, in the same way that all of the cells are part of that electromagnetic field in and around the body, which is part of the electromagnetic field of the Earth, which is part of the electromagnetic field, information field of the universe, once you tune into that electromagnetic field and realize that the electromagnetic field of the others extends more of what you are can be, in the same way that the cells have their DNA and they read out part of their DNA to maintain themselves, but they also have the DNA of every other cell in the body. And our DNA is, say, 99% similar to that of the chimpanzee, 98% similar to a banana, if that story is correct. So in our DNA, we are not just connected to other people, but we are connected to all other animals, we are connected to all other plants, we are connected to all microbes, virus, fungus, spores. And through our DNA, we can connect to all of them and experience all of them in us. And then whatever you do will be connected to what other humans do, what other animals do, what other plants do, what other microbes do, what the universe does, and then what you do is actually the logical step to take there where you are at that moment that you are there on behalf of the universe as a whole. And that is then based on feeling the universe in you, being a God man, God woman, and then knowing that you can do and actually need to do what the universe is doing and needs to be doing through you there where you are. But then the unknown or the unknowable is simply that what you do not know because your body has its limitation, but your cells are all interconnected. Through your cells you're connected to all of humanity, because your zygote originates from the zygote of your parents, which originates from the zygote of their parents. So all of humanity is your ancestor. We are all family, not just with humanity, but also with all life forms. And then as your DNA is that holographic connection to all of that, once you connect to your DNA, an orgasm is one of the ways to touch into that electromagnetic field, and to learn to navigate these electromagnetic domains of information of others, then you know what the others know, and then you know what you can do. The I-God principle becomes very concrete and tangible and active, but also as a result of everybody knowing what everybody is knowing, like a computer connecting through the internet and becoming one whole mainframe, then nobody tells anybody what to do, because everybody knows what everybody else is doing, and everybody knows what is the gap that can be filled in that weaving of consciousness into matter, which is taking place here, what we're participating in. That's the funfair game that we're doing, the virtual reality game that we're playing, learning to be creators in creation, but that's not based on what we know as individuals, but we need to realize that's what we know as humans or humanity, and that's what we know as life on Earth, and that's what we know as creators in creation. And so science only knows at what individuals can know together. Religions sort of talk about what we can know as humans in humanity, but a lot of religions get lost by not understanding what this I God principle is, and so they start to compete instead of complete. And mysticism knows that. Mysticism knows that we are all part of that unknowable whole. And once we realize that and can tap into it and sense it, we can also feel that there is a lot in what we know that doesn't compute in the universe. So that's where we can get out of our limited, idiotic form of being into a transcendental form of being, realizing that other people are more of the same. The better we understand that, we can better let go of the parts in us which didn't work out well, the parts of experience that didn't digest, the scar tissues of the past. And so the more you understand from somebody else that things can be done differently, the more you can doing things which you always keep on doing the same by reflex.
Yeah.
And so that's where people then dissolve into each other, and that's what sex is about, that people can, from the physical contact, go into this change of physiology, go into this change, this merging of the electromagnetic fields, to this unification of the light field. And of course, when people connect to the light field of each other, they also connect to the light field of everything around them, and they also connect to the light field of the universe as a whole. And so that is where orgasm is then one of these ways to dissolve from the idiotic self and enter into the transcendental self, to enter into the universal self, and that is actually directly shared with others. And when people have experienced that, that's when they stop being an idiot and become loving. Instead of being hating, they become loving, because instead of being separate, alienated, they are integrated and one with all that is. And the God principle, integrate, generate, operate, destroyed, is that capability to redefine our own definitions. And that is where I started. Is the universe boxed in? Is it contained in a bucket? Is it in a balloon? Or is it a bubble which contains the self? And actually, and Tetrionics explains that, it is an integral light field, and we cannot imagine it, for the simple reason, if we look at the parts, we cannot see the whole. If we look at objects, we cannot experience being a subject. If we look at a description of reality, we cannot see that that's a formulation of realization. So we need to, as the story of Odin says, if you want to see the invisible, you need to stop looking. You need to start seeing. You need to shift from your eyes to your pineal gland, your third eye. You need to stop looking at the things around you and start seeing the things within you, because within you, you can then see that you are a point in a vortex in the universe as a whole, and that with your freedom of choice, you are actually in the pineal gland, pivotal in your participation in creation. And once you see that, then in the hypophysis, the neurons and the hormones will define yourself in that setting. Then the endocrine glands, the chakras, will calibrate you in that setting, and then the cells will operate in that setting. And so the freedom of choices in the light field, the hypophysis is then where you take your decisions, the organ glands is where you create your internal climate with your convictions, and then your cells act on that by reflex. Again, those four levels of consciousness, but those four levels of consciousness are not based on us being conscious of the environment, and then when we close our eyes, experiencing our body as a subconscious experience, because we are so focused on the environment, where we are only part aware of the body. But if you go deeper into that, you go into the unconscious of what the organs are doing in building the body. And when you go to the deepest level, you go from beta to alpha to theta to delta wavelength, when you go from the environment to the body to the organs to the cells. And in the cells, then you realize, and out of conscious, that you're actually part of the universe as a whole. For the cells, that's the other way around. They know that they're part of the universe as a whole, because in the sleep cycle, when at the delta wave level, that's where they operate. And then the cells know that they are a part of an organ, so they're submerged into the consciousness of the organ. So that's where they experience subconsciousness, in being conscious. And then the cells are also aware that they're not part of, yet connected to and integrated with what the other organs are doing. So that's unconscious for them, but it is part of the consciousness of what they are. And then outside of the body for the cells is literally out of conscious. So when researchers talk about the four levels of conscious, the beta brainwaves for the environment, the alpha brainwaves for the body, the theta brainwaves for the organs, and the delta brainwaves for coma or cellular consciousness, from the perspective of the cells, it is the other way around. And when people in themselves learn to go there, and that's what shamanic spiritual training is about, what mystery schools offer, that you need to do what Odin did, stop looking at what's going on around you, and start seeing what's going on inside of you, start realizing that you should not be responding to what happens in you as an echo of what happened within you before, and stop responding to what happens around you at that time or before, and stop responding to what is around you at any time, but realize that what is right within you. And once you realize that, everything turns the other way around. And I've had a couple of experiences in which I realized glimpses of that. And first time I realized that, my first conclusion was, everything I know is wrong. And that is why I said that first question is probably a good one to start with.
Very good.
Would it be wise to keep this recording as one response to this first question, do the other questions separately?
Yes, I think so. And just by a quick reflection of what is sitting in me, having listened to this, is in your own discoveries and through this direct medium, really, of the body, the way you described with the shiatsu and the awareness of the, I forget the other, but the gyo, is that the overcharged or the stagnant, that, you know, but this ability to feel it with your own hands and sense the energy in the field of the other person, but also your own interaction with theirs. And yes, you become highly attuned to what can't be seen, but certainly felt, and especially when you have significant experience with that, you know, it's heightened, and you notice so much more nuance and certainly, you know, great examples of the differences between the various people that you work on, that they're not all registering in the same areas of the body, mind, spirit, soul in a given moment. It's so individual. But this feeling of this kind of cohesion when you talk about your ideal and your idea, and much of really even the expression of that now has taken shape through your own thinking and contemplations. And so how do you hope, and this would be a part of another question, to transmit this to enough people for their understanding? Would it be through writing? Would it be through direct presentations, you know, to animations or some kind of a guidebook? And we can come back to that. But because you have this orientation toward the body and including the capacities that we have for the ecstatic, which involves, you know, breaking the taboo that the whole culture has hypnotized people into being sort of against the body rather than favoring its natural wisdom and capacity to recreate itself, to transmute one state of being into another. And especially if you're operating from consciousness, you have a slight angle on having more of that. Because we begin to notice much more subtlety in this sort of read that the body is able to take. Is it always articulated? Is it more felt and then acted upon instantaneously almost as you become more attuned?
There's a lot in that. Let me connect to a couple of bits to that.
Okay.
Because most of it would be a separate story.
Yeah.
As you said, when you do shiatsu, your body normally responds to the electromagnetic information field within you.
Yeah.
If you use dowsing, by whatever technique, you can use a dowsing rod or a pendulum, or you can use the Omura O-ring technique, or you can rub your fingers like this used in radiology, then your body responds to a larger, an unconscious electromagnetic field within you, which is connected to the electromagnetic field around you. But in the same way that the body can respond to your electromagnetic field, if you allow it, you can also let it respond to the electromagnetic field of somebody else, which is where your hand then indicates where the excess and deficit qi or shen charge is in somebody else in shiatsu.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, people need to be aware that they need to respond to their own body and not to the electromagnetic information field of others. Because that's where you then call them obsessed or possessed. So they need to be able to always come back to their own field and disperse, let go of the fields of others again. They need to be able to recenter, and that's why all of the religions always talk about meditation as medication.
Okay.
Another layer of what you said is about the taboos of science, and the taboos of society, and the taboos of religion, which is basically about orgasm. Because, of course, if you realize that in sex you can shift from the anatomy by the physical touch to the physiology, the arousal and excitement in the body, the change of hormones, and from there you can change the neurons, you can actually change the chemistry and thereby change the electromagnetic activity in the body. So you shift from the physical to the chemical to the electromagnetic. But once you realize that in the electromagnetic, you can go into the light field, which is where orgasm then comes in, then through orgasm you can discover that you're enlightened, literally. Because you start to operate in the light field, you start to operate with the light field, you understand that everybody is light. And then, of course, if you want to have a slave society, then the first thing you do is say, well, okay, sex is no longer allowed. Because if you discover that you are a god by realizing that orgasm gets you there, then you can no longer control the slaves. So you have birth registry, you have a marriage registry, you have a death registry, so that essentially you chart the gate of birth and death and of interconnection, and as a result you can sort of put sex and thus orgasm in the taboo sphere. But through orgasm people can discover that there is that electromagnetic dynamic within us. Once they understand that, they realize that that is not just what comes into play in a sexual interplay, but it's actually something that we have all the time, and then they discover Kundalini.
Mm-hmm.
And once they realize that Kundalini is this internal electromagnetic dynamic, which is like a flow up and down, but also a toroidal shape around our body. That's what Itzhak Bentov described in his Stalking the Wild Pendulum. He described it from the body going to the head, but then from the head it goes back to the body. He described that around the head comes this, there is this electromagnetic field like the Van Allen belts around the earth, but then from the head it can go back to the body, and then it can connect to the earth. Electromagnetic field, and then it can connect to the electromagnetic field of the galaxies, and then suddenly you realize that through these electromagnetic fields you're like a mobile phone, you're connected to everything. And once you have that connection, which people also know as love or the mystic experience, you're flooded by realizing that everything is connected to everything. And once I was in Egypt with a woman who had just gone into a temple, came out with a headache, so I helped her discover where it came from. So she remembered an experience of a long time ago and how she then died, and then in that dying process relived in her present body. She, being Austrian, then said, "Das ist ja aber wunderschön," that's beautiful, because she suddenly was in that space where everything and everywhere and every time was interconnected. To be omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and actually to be creator in creation is what everybody can experience.
And could you translate again what she said?
That is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because suddenly she realized that everything, she could see everything every time.
Simultaneous.
Yeah. So she saw everything as she experienced it. Everything existed. She was no longer in her limited perception. She was in her unlimited perception. Yeah. And afterwards, she started to read the hieroglyphics with her hands, and at the same time said, "I cannot do this." So she was the example of we are both. We are local and limited.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also unlimited and non-local, which people termed God. So there are ways to get there. And of course, whatever brand of religion is available, that's just labels on bottles. And evidently, if somebody else can tell you, it's because somebody else discovered that for themselves. But if they discover that for themselves, you don't need to drink their Kool-Aid, you can just make your own and realize that if they could do that, you could do that. Talking about the weird stuff, one time I had this conversation with what they call Jesus, and what I was told was essentially, if it is only to prove, it's a proof of principle, proof of concept. It can be done, and if it can be done, anybody and everybody can do it. So to learn to do that, you asked me how to spread that out. I count on everybody being able to learn that, the 100 monkey principles. If I could find it, then it is already available in the electromagnetic consciousness field of humanity, so others will find it.
Yeah.
And one of the things to share it with others is this Haramara project of next year, Healers Healing Healers, because it's all about sharing that with others, by experiencing it, not talking about it, but doing it.
Yeah.
And not knowing it, but remembering.
Yeah. Well, may it be so. And increasingly.
Did that answer your question? Shall we close this recording then?
Yeah, I think for now that's good. Thank you.
It's an unanswerable question. People need to answer it for themselves anyhow.
Yes, and I get that this is from very direct contemplations through your own instrument, but also is ubiquitous, because what works for the individual also applies to other people's perceptions of the same field, and you know, the same way as trying to get a witness to say what they just noticed happening and getting 10 different stories. So
But thank you. By the way, thank you so much for making it possible to talk about this, because we all have this inner knowing, and by talking about it, it can be brought out. And there was something else that crossed my mind.
Well, you have a unique combination of the mathematical and the poetic renderings through your own direct experience, and they're very refined at this point. So, you know, not everyone's going to stumble on that and have a complete realization the way the woman in Egypt did, you know.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, the little clues and hints are all along the way if we're paying attention to what's going on inside, which is really where that directive comes from.
So yeah.
I like the ideas. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Did you remember what you were going to?
Approximately. Sometimes these thoughts try to hide. Essentially, what I describe and how I describe it is not what it is about. It is only about everybody for themselves, in themselves, by themselves, can look for it, and then they will discover it. It's not what I describe and how I describe it, and this is the thought that I had fleeting through me. I tend to describe all these things from the cognitive level. I try to describe all these things, let's say, from the head, not from the heart, not from the hara, and not from the holy bone, for the simple reason that the head is outside of the body. The head is the part of the body turned inside out, so that we can have a periscope looking out on the earth. The head, the brain, originally topologically would be at the core of our body, but it has turned inside out, and so when I talk about these things, I talk from the head to the head, because I want to make sure that people create their own image and then for themselves decide what they want to connect up to with their heart, how they feel into it, and then from there on how they want to feel that in the hara, how they want to bring that to life in their own life, and from that how they connect up to that in their holy bone, how they want to be what they want to be. So I want to stay away as far as possible from their decision on what they want to be, how they want to be.
Yeah.
And as a result, my presentations are, let's say, they're heady.
Yeah. I see your method of your madness there. Yeah.
There's an intent behind that.
Got it.
So that people, of course, they cannot understand all of what I say, but they can feel into it. And what they can feel into it, into, is what they can resonate to within themselves. And that's also the principle of healing. A healer can accept in themselves what somebody else cannot accept for themselves in themselves. But once a healer connects to somebody being healed, that what they share gets amplified, and that what they do not share gets less.
Yeah.
And normally the healthy part is what they share, and the diseased part is what becomes less. So in the other, they can feel what is shared with the other. But as a result, they can also see that what they experience as disease suddenly is not that important, and they know it's not that important, and they know that if it's not that important, they can let it go, because without the healer connecting to them, it is just as loud as everything else, and that's not just for pain, so, but also for fear or for depression or for death. So they can just see what is not part of them, and again, that's why many people wanted to get rid of orgasm, because that is, of course, also where you then discover that everything that is not important is just not important. And as a result, that what is suddenly becomes very much more important, and that is much larger and much more diverse, much more flexible than what we think. So that is the practical answer to that first question. And the practical practice of that answer is what we will be doing next year, when together with others, with words and without words, we can just share our experience of being one and being whole, in talking with each other in body language and in the language of nature and being, so that in the wordless and the mindless, that being can be shared, communicated, and amplified. That's why it's called healing healers, that everybody can come back to their senses in realizing that we are so much more than what we are told, and so much more than we think that we are.
Well, and for me, the serendipity that you've been holding and cultivating this idea for some time, and over the years of my being on staff at Haramara, a whole 15 years of my life, realizing that's actually what I wanted to share there, that I wasn't there to teach yoga, I wasn't there to stand on my head, I was there really to, you know, create a space, an opening, and my question was, who heals the healers? And then, of course, the answer is, we do. we are they. We are what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
So thanks for your time on this. I really appreciate it, Otto.
Thank you for asking me that question, because then the answer can unfold, and people can feel that they need to be the answer. They are the answer. They already have the answer.
Yes, and this is my idea of a good time. So thank you. That's a good playground.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.